I'm Elena.
My name is Patrick Riley.
We're tennis.
I don't want your bio. I mean, your bio is really nice. People can read it. But I really like revisionist history.
I don't know how good I am about revisionist history, but I guess I could take a moment to talk about what I feel like are misconceptions to the reductionist way that people look at, like, read a band bio or interpret their history. And I guess I would like to say a few things to, I guess, cynics. A lot of people won't even be aware of these things, but to some people who are maybe skeptical, our sailing trip, which I will in no way discuss, was not and couldn't possibly have been a gimmick by dictionary definitions, because it occurred first, totally separately from music, and we never wrote music until a year later. And they were totally discrete events, but one inspired another later down the line. So to anyone who thinks that we are using the sailing story as a clever ploy for press, it's totally not true. It's just a random fact of our life that is easy to repeat, I guess. And then lastly, I guess I would just address our marriage. I'd say those are the two most commonly repeated facts regarding our band, is that we're married and we went sailing. And as far as our being married is concerned, it's exactly like any other marriage on the planet. I feel like people are so cynical that they think these details about you that trickle their way down through press releases or write-ups or whatever are somehow, like, inextricably bound or motivate your music or something. And I just want to emphasize that there's a huge distinction between those things.
And I wrote this to be funny. Husband and wife, not since Sonny and Cher have there been so many couples, brothers and sisters. This album's by a band. Let's just start right there. This is a band, right?
Yeah, I mean, Patrick and I are definitely a writing team, but we are a band. We live like a band. We act like a band. Our drummer, James Brown, has been with us for a very long time now. And we envision our songs to be played as a band. And I think it's so significant to people because it's such a repeatable, memorable fact that we're married. But it doesn't have that much to do with everything, even insofar as people will often interpret my lyrics as constantly being about Patrick when they aren't at all. Or people will infer that a song is a love song about Patrick when it is in no way a love song or about Patrick.
This is a little bit more serious, because the dreaded sophomore album. This showed up in the mailbox, and I said, okay, I'm going to track it. And I tracked it, and I didn't look at the sticker. But I heard Petition and I said, okay, that's the track I'm going to lead with, because this thing reminds me of Denise Williams from 1972, mixed with saying, you know, not even the influence, but just, it was just like, immediately, I'm like, that's a hit. When I popped it in, and remember, I had pulled it out of an envelope in the car while I'm driving, popped it in. I didn't even know who your producer was. I knew nothing about this. I just listened to it and I liked the sound. Is this the dreaded sophomore album? Did you dread over it?
All of our goals with our band had already been achieved. So it was like hard to say that like all that expectation was really going to shape us, because we had already like won the battle, so to speak. Like all of our goals were already met. Like I think our goal was to just have a song on Pitchfork and then play a music festival. And then like later when we played a music festival, we're like, oh, let's make a unattainable goal. And that unattainable goal was playing Primavera Music Festival in Barcelona. And we ended up playing that, and then we're like, okay, we're done. Like, it's all downhill from here. So our second album, there was a bit of relief, and I don't think we were too worried. And to us, that was the first time we were writing music as a band, because for Cape Dory, our first album, all those songs were written before we were actually a band. We had just written those songs together in the privacy of our home, and we had no intention of releasing them or really doing anything with them. And of course, like some of our friends convinced us to release the stuff, and it snowballed. And anyways, we ended up making a second album.
When you enter into a partnership with one Patrick Carney, when you enter a partnership with somebody like that, so when you enter into a studio with somebody that A, you admire, obviously, B, that has an amazing reputation for certain sounds and all of that, what when you obviously it was pretty exciting to do, but more so I'm more interested in how you thought about that partnership and what the discussions were.
That was something that we cared a lot about, which is, I think, really why we sought out Patrick Carney. He was the only person we really pursued and we're fortunate enough to be able to work with. We knew about his history of producing and kind of acting as sound engineer for the Black Keys, and we knew he understood what that would mean to be so autonomous as an artist, to have had complete control, and then to turn around later and work with Danger Mouse and to relinquish some of that. And so I felt like he would intuit that distinction, that relationship. And we were at a place where we were very hesitant to share any creative control with someone else. And we felt like he was someone who would handle that responsibility very well and be respectful of what we wanted. And he really, really was. I can't emphasize enough the way that he really produced by kind of coaxing things out of us. But he would never, a lot of people would say, oh, this sounds just like Pat Carney. It sounds like he wrote this and that and whatever. But it was really just him motivating us to get out of our comfort zone and try new things. And it was a very good thing.
Was this, because I know he's talked about recording digitally. So was this recorded digitally? It was, right? But, you know, but there's this whole thing, oh, well, if you record analog, you know, so people spend so much time on the technology versus that balance. And you really were seeking out a definitive balance here between where's the distortion come in, where, how much do I filter, how much, you know, keeping a bottom in there and, you know, all of that. That's a tricky thing, is it not?
Yeah, we definitely started out with this like minimalist approach to music where everything of ours was recorded on an old 4-track and it had this like very restricted and fuzzy and kind of warm sound to it. And we're like, well, going forward, since that's the foundation of our band, we always have to like keep that in mind. And when we talked to Patrick Carney about this, he like proposed this, that we record the album digitally, but we take a lot of the aspects that you would recording with analog equipment into recording digitally. So it sounds a little confusing when I say that, but we basically, it was this like, it was almost like we weren't using a computer. We were still tracking everything, you know, with trying to get the sound first rather than manipulating it later.
Right. We would just, what we decided to do was treat our performances in the studio as if we were recording to tape and that we were very committed. But embrace the convenience and the simplicity and the other tools that recording digitally has to offer. And, you know, we weren't there to impress anybody. We just wanted to make a record and we had a limited amount of time and that's what we wanted.
So Letterman and Leno, when you do those shows, and I've attended a lot of those, that's very different than rock and roll. That kind of takes you into showbiz and you know, okay, you're going to do your 3-minute song and voila, and you know, and hopefully he'll come out and pat you on the back and say something nice. So what was that experience like? Was that, because bands either say amazing experience because of the exposure, which obviously it is. How else do you get these days to millions of people? But on the other hand, did it work for you?
Obviously, we felt honored to be there and a little out of our element. Actually, it's funny the distinction you made between rock and roll or showbiz, which we joke about all the time. What do we say when people ask us who don't know us? What do you do? We joke that we say, I'm in showbiz, which we totally aren't. I realized as soon as we were on TV, that is not what we do. It is not showbiz. And actually, one of the very, very kind, lovely men in Jay Leno's band spoke with me afterwards, and he was very playfully teasing me. He was like, you have a wonderful voice, but can I give you a hint about being on television? And I was like, oh, great. What is it? And he goes, open your eyes. And I started laughing, and he did a very silly impression of me with my eyes closed and then opening them and being like blinded, deer in headlights by lights, and closing them again very timidly. And I'm sure that is what I do, because in a normal venue at a normal show, those things really don't matter. You can have your own stage presence and there's no particular expectation in general. Whereas TV, it's a totally different thing that we didn't even think about at the time. So I definitely think we were out of our element, but it was an experience we enjoyed.
So back to the record for a second, there's a William Butler Yeats poem.
I struggled for a long time regarding the lyrics for this record. We had a lot of demos written that were just, you know, I had wordless melodies, and I had serious writer's block because I do not prefer the medium of poetry. I've never been very good at it. It's actually Patrick's area of expertise. He was a creative writing major and took poetry in college, and I never, ever did. I've never studied it. So I decided to give myself a little education and go back to those classics that I paid no attention to whatsoever growing up. And I would read poem after poem after poem and feel nothing, because I've never even been one. I don't even read lyrics of other bands. I love music. I just don't care about the words ever. And suddenly I found this Yeats poem and I couldn't stop reading. I read it over and over and over and over and letting the words sink in. And within an hour, I had written lyrics to Origins and My Better Self. It just unlocked something inside of me. And so we decided to structure the record very loosely in a very similar theme, and then name the record Young and Old, almost as a thank you to Yeats for getting me out of my slump.
I've invented a thing called a musical sandwich, and it's two of your songs as the bread, and then songs by anybody else you want to play in between.